a base hit. It's a 1-0.
You'll never hit a bigger home run in your life.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom
ball
on
game over. World Series.
A World Series win.
Hey, listeners, letting you know that this week's episode contains some colorful language. You may want to screen this one before listening with the kids. I'm Nina Instead, and this is Deadball. Clifty, Arkansas isn't much of a town. It's what some might describe as a wide spot in the road. But Clifty does have a claim to fame. It's the birthplace of future Hall of Famer Floyd Ellis Vaughn. Floyd was born March 19, 1912, to parents Robert and Laura. When he was still an infant, his parents relocated the family, which was made up of Floyd and two older sisters, to California, first to Mendocino County, a community not far from San Francisco. Then, when Robert found work in the oil fields, the family settled in Fullerton, in Orange County, California, about 25 miles southeast of Los Angeles. And this is where the Vaughn family would put down roots. When Floyd went off to school, his classmates learned that he was originally from Arkansas. They gave him the nickname Arky, and it stuck. When Arky started at Fullerton High School in the second half of the 1920s, he was a standout at multiple sports, football, basketball, and baseball. Baseball was where he showed his best performance. Skills that were noticed by his fellow classmate, future U.S. President Richard M. Nixon. When Arky wasn't playing ball at the school, he was active in community baseball leagues. His talent was obvious, and it wasn't long before one of his neighbors decided to brag on the young athlete. You see, Arky's neighbor was good friends with a baseball scout, a man by the name of Art Griggs. Griggs had played pro ball himself. In fact, he was on the Cleveland team back in 1911 when they tragically lost their pitcher, Addie Joss, a story we discussed in a previous episode. In 1926, Griggs retired from baseball and spent the offseason at his home near Los Angeles. He had played for the Los Angeles Angels from 1920 to 1923 and called the community home. Griggs decided to see if Arky was as good as his friend said, and it was Griggs who signed the almost 20-year-old Vaughn to his first professional baseball contract in January of 1931. Arky was sent to play for the Wichita Aviators of the Class A Western League. Griggs was confident he'd made the right choice signing Vaughn after he got a look at his numbers that first year. Vaughn batted .338 with 21 home runs, 81 RBIs, and a league-leading 145 runs scored with 43 stolen bases. It was a big year for Vaughn both off and on the field. He married his sweetheart, Margaret, and their marriage was a happy one that would produce four children. Meanwhile, the Pirates were watching what Arky was doing in Wichita. While he started the 1932 season in Kansas, it wasn't long before Pirates shortstop Tommy Thiveno sustained an injury, breaking his index finger, making him unable to play. In comes Arky Vaughn, barely 20 years old, and a starting shortstop for the Pirates. He made his debut on April 17, 1932, in a game against the Cincinnati Reds, a game that the Pirates won with a ninth-inning rally where they overcame a 3-1 deficit to win 4-3. His first year playing pro ball, he had a good season. He was batting .318, but he struggled on the field, committing a league-leading 46 errors. At just 20 years of age, Arky was the youngest player in the National League. And on August 11, 1932, in an important game against the Chicago Cubs, Arky made a crucial error in the 10th inning, an error that allowed the Cubs to beat Pittsburgh and take over first place in the National League. The Pirates would finish the season in second place, losing out to the pennant-winning Cubs. I imagine this was quite a weight for the young player to bear, knowing that his error knocked the team out of contention. The Cubs would go on to play the Yankees that year in the Fall Classic, the series that would become best known for Babe Ruth's called shot. For Archie Vaughn and his teammates in Pittsburgh, the 1932 season meant second place. And Archie felt bad about the error, not only because it deprived Pittsburgh of a shot at the championship, but because Archie's teammates lost out on World Series bonus checks that he knew many depended on to support their families during the off-season. That winter, Archie vowed he would become a better fielder, because despite his hard work, his defense remained a problem. Archie played shortstop in all but two of the Pirates games, and he began to exhibit good power as well as remarkable speed on the field. And despite these positive attributes, he logged 46 errors. His error totals would remain high throughout his career, but that didn't change the fact that he had outstanding range and was able to make plays that other fielders could not. At the plate, Archie was a force to be reckoned with. In 1933, he batted .319 and led the league with 19 triples. But his performance at the plate did not stop the team from worrying about his uneven skills as a shortstop. Wanting to get the best out of their young player, the Pirates brought in Hall of Famer Honus Wagner to work with Archie. Wagner even roomed with his young protege on the road. As the two worked on improving his skills, Archie's defense became cleaner and smoother. Working with Wagner, Archie proved to be a quick learner and developed great range. His skills improved so much that Vaughn was invited to play shortstop for the National League at the 1934 All-Star Game, an honor he would receive for several consecutive years. 1935 was the best season of Archie's career. He batted .385 while leading the league in walks with 97. His on-base percentage was .491 and his slugging percentage .607. Throw in his 19 home runs and 99 RBIs, it was a career-making season for the young shortstop. Today, in 2020, Archie's .491 on-base percentage from 1935, it is still the club record in Pittsburgh after 85 years. In 1935, Archie finished third in the baseball writers' vote for the National League's Most Valuable Player. The award ended up going to Detroit Tiger Hank Greenberg. And in 2001, baseball writer Bill James, he called Archie's 1935 season, quote, the best ever by a shortstop other than Honus Wagner. And sure, Bill James may have revisited that opinion after seeing Alex Rodriguez play for Texas, but I think we can agree that Rodriguez had certain advantages that Archie Vaughn did not. Over the next six seasons, Vaughn continued to be one of the best-hitting shortstops in the game, batting over .300 every year and regularly being at or near the top of the league in most offensive categories. With help from his mentor, Honus Wagner, Archie continued to improve defensively, and he led the league in total chances in 1938 and 1939, while finishing in the top three in fielding percentage four times. In 1938, Archie again finished third in Most Valuable Player voting, when the Pirates finished second and had their best record during his tenure with the team. This time, the award went to Boston's Jimmy Fox. In 1940, Archie was appointed team captain by new manager Frankie Frisch. Although he led the team in runs scored and triples again, he slumped to a career-low batting average of .300. His batting average prompted Frisch to replace Vaughn with Alf Anderson as a starting shortstop for the 1941 season. However, Anderson couldn't hit, and Vaughn was quickly returned to the starting lineup. And listeners, Alf Anderson would not have much of a professional career. He was with Pittsburgh in 41 and 42. Then he played for the Pirates again in 1946 after serving his country during World War II. That pretty much sums up his pro ball career. In 1941, Archie Vaughn was again selected as the starting shortstop for the National League All-Star team. And during the All-Star game at Briggs Stadium in Detroit, Vaughn offered up what could be his most memorable on-field performance. After getting a single early in the game, Archie homered in the seventh with a man on base, and this put the National League ahead 3-2. In the next inning, Vaughn hit his second successive two-run homer of the game, raising the National League's lead to 5-2. It looked like Arky would be the hero of the day, until Ted Williams of the Red Sox won the game for the American League 7-5. He hit a dramatic ninth-inning three-run homer. And listeners, it's a shame that Williams' ninth-inning hit is what people remember from that game, because Vaughn hitting two 2-run homers in a single game? That's impressive. At the end of the 1941 season, Arky had played as a starting shortstop for a decade. But the Pirates were moving in a new direction, and he found himself traded to the Brooklyn Dodgers that December. In the trade, the Dodgers received Vaughn, and Pittsburgh collected catcher Babe Bat Boy Phelps, pitcher Luke Hamlin, infielder Pete Coscarart, and outfielder Jim Wasdell. Brooklyn planned to put Arky on third base, but then their starting shortstop, he was drafted into the armed forces, and Arky found himself back at shortstop. Arky was not at his best or his happiest in Brooklyn. Although in the 1943 season, he finally reached 20 stolen bases on the year and was batting .305. One of the reasons Vaughn was unhappy rested with Dodger manager Leo DeRozier. It was as a Dodger in 1943 that Arky shocked his teammates by taking on Brooklyn's manager. This happened after team manager Leo the Lip DeRozier unleashed an unpleasant verbal assault on pitcher Bobo Newsom in the Dodger clubhouse. Arky didn't like what he heard, and he let DeRozier know it. The altercation, which was primarily a verbal dispute, ended with Arky taking off his jersey and handing it to DeRozier. Rumor is, he explained to the manager exactly where he could dispose of the uniform before he turned and walked away. Famed sports writer Red Smith wrote of the incident, quote, "The quarrel between manager and pitcher raged through the clubhouse, involving other members of the team and the press, and some rather free exchanges of personalities." Free exchanges of personalities. Great explanation, Smith. When Vaughn walked out, most of the team followed suit. Vaughn was that well-liked and respected in the clubhouse. Upper management intervened and convinced the players to take the field under DeRozier that day, but Leo and Arky were strictly business from then on. At the end of the 1943 season, Arky returned to his ranch in California and stayed there. He stayed out of professional baseball for 3 years. The league termed it a voluntary retirement, which meant that the Dodgers still owned Vaughn, and if he intended to return to the game, it was at their discretion. It was speculated that Arky left baseball in a huff over the DeRozier incident, but only Vaughn knew for sure, and he refused to discuss it with the press. However, he later told his family that Leo DeRozier was the best manager he ever played for. Not his favorite manager, but the best. Regardless, at the age of 31, when some players are reaching their peak, Arky Vaughn walked away from the sport. Vaughn moved back to California to spend time with his 4 children and take care of the family ranch. It appeared to all that Vaughn's baseball days were behind him. Then, after the war, in a move that surprised everyone, Arky came out of retirement. He chose to return to the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. Coincidentally, this was the year that DeRozier was suspended by Commissioner Happy Chandler for associating with gamblers in Cuba. This was also the year that Jackie Robinson joined the Dodgers. For as difficult a man as DeRozier could be, when it was made known that Robinson was joining the team, DeRozier told his players, quote, "I do not care if the guy is yellow or black or if he has stripes like a fucking zebra. I'm the manager of this team, and I say he plays." 1947 wasn't his best showing. Arky's knees weren't what they used to be, and this limited him to a utility role. He played 64 games and finished the year batting .325. 1947 allowed Arky his one and only World Series appearance, getting 1 hit and 2 pinch at-bats as the Dodgers lost to the New York Yankees in 7 games. DeRozier's suspension ended, and in 1948, Arky returned to the Dodgers in a similar capacity. However, after batting a career-low .244 in 65 games, he was released at the end of the season. 1989, Vaughn returned to California, where he signed a one-year contract to play for the minor league San Francisco Seals of the Pacific Coast League. This let him be closer to the ranch and to the places that he loved to hunt and fish, as well as having better access to his family. Arky Vaughn retired from baseball with 1,173 runs scored, 96 home runs, 926 RBIs, 118 steals, a 3.18 batting average, and a .406 on-base percentage. The records that Arky set back in 1935, his .385 batting average, .491 OBP, and 1.098 OPS in 1935, those are all Pittsburgh team records. With his baseball career ended, Arky settled in on his ranch up in Eagleville, a tiny town in the northeast corner of California. Like Clifty, Arkansas, where Vaughn was born, Eagleville was not much more than a wide spot in the road, 70 miles south of the Oregon border. Arky spent his days working on the ranch and enjoying the outdoors with his wife and children. On August 30th, 1952, Bill Weimer, Arky's friend and neighbor, he showed up at the ranch. He was going to talk Arky into going fishing. And Arky declined. He said, "Look, I've got a lot of work to do." But Weimer was persistent, and he talked him into the excursion, reminding Arky that the work, well, it would still be there when they were done fishing. Vaughn invited his wife Margaret, who had grown to love the outdoors nearly as much as her husband, if she wanted to tag along with them, but she declined. And listeners, had Margaret joined the outing, it's likely they would have fished from the shore of the lake instead of going out in the boat. It was just the two men, and fishing gear in tow, Weimer and Vaughn headed for Lost Lake, launching their boat into the water. When they found a place where the trout were biting, Weimer, a logger and a large man weighing in at more than 200 pounds, he stood up in the boat so he could cast. Vern Wheeler, an older gentleman who witnessed the incident from the shore of Lost Lake, he told authorities how the boat overturned, sending both men into the chilly waters. And while it was a sunny late summer day, temperatures were only around 70, and overnight they got into the 50s, so the lake was cold, and neither man was prepared for their fall into the water. Arky, he was a good swimmer, but his friend Weimer was not. Both men tried to make their way toward the shore, but Weimer began to struggle long before he got there. Realizing that he might not make it and being weighed down by his shoes and clothing, Weimer started to panic. Arky tried to help his friend, who was much larger than the former ball player and a weaker swimmer, and the two labored toward the shore. They were only 25 feet from safety when both men went under and never resurfaced. Their bodies were recovered the next day. Arky Vaughn was only 40 years old. After her husband's death, Margaret could not keep up with the ranch, so she sold it and bought a small house where she raised their children. Margaret would pass away in 1978. Arky Vaughn is buried at the Eagleville Cemetery, not far from his beloved ranch. His wife Margaret and daughter Judy, who passed away in the 1980s, they are buried nearby. Arky Vaughn was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1985. After the ceremony, Arky's children received a congratulatory telegram from Arky's high school classmate, former President Richard Nixon, who remembered Arky as a skilled athlete during their days at Fullerton High School. The Dead Ball Podcast is created by Tim Scott. This week's episode was written by me, Nina Instead, and Tim Scott. Chuck Walters is our technical consultant and audio editor. If you're enjoying the podcast, take a moment to leave a rating or review on your favorite podcatcher. This helps other baseball lovers find the show and the stories shared here. To learn more about Dead Ball or talk with like-minded baseball fans, join the Dead Ball discussion group on Facebook.